Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right, 50% off, half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to the Red Sox On Deck Prospect Podcast. I am your host, Jake Devereaux, and today joining me for episode 2, we have the regular crew, Shelly Verstrait of The Dynasty Guru, Over the Monster, and Pitcher List, and we have Bob Osgood of The Dynasty Guru and Over the Monster. Guys, welcome back to the show. I am excited to be talking about what is my favorite level of the minor leagues tonight. We're going to be talking about Double A Portland. Man, I am just so excited for this episode. Bob, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Jake. Thanks for asking. Ready to jump into Double A. I agree, there's a lot of exciting players here. As we kind of go down the minor league list, this is definitely has been circled on my calendar to talk about these players. It's a good group here.
Yeah, it really is. Shelly, you live in Richmond, so Flying Squirrels, that's San Fran Double A?
It is. It is a San Francisco Double A. So we do get a few, you know, Portland games down here in Richmond, and whenever they're in town, you definitely know I will be behind home plate.
Nice. Gotta love that. Absolutely. Double A baseball is just a gem. So today, the show rundown, we're going to be talking about some news and notes, getting you updated on how some prospects are doing in spring training. We're going to get to some wild MILB rule changes, and then we're going to run down the actual lineups as projected by SoxProspects.com. All right, let's get into it, guys. A little bit of maintenance and reminders before we get started. You know, this is a new show for us here at Over the Monster. So if you like the show, please go on and rate, review, follow. You can follow the show. You can subscribe to it. You can give us a 5-star review as well. We definitely appreciate that. All you have to do is look up the Over the Monster podcast on anywhere you're getting your podcasts, and it'll come up. And if you press that subscribe button, you'll be subscribed to not only this show, but you'll be subscribed to the Red Seat, the Over the Monster podcast, and the Precap show. So all of those will come right to the same stream. All right, news and notes, guys. We had some pretty big news coming up. First, we're going to lead off with some bad news, though. Brian Mata is dealing with a partially torn UCL. He's going to go the old rest and rehab route, which I feel like he should be talking to Garrett Richards about how that went for him. But what are your impressions on the Brian Mata situation? Is this what you think he should do, or do you think that, you know, maybe he should go a different route? Shelley?
I mean, I honestly think that he should probably go a different route. Again, just like you said, maybe he needs to have a heart-to-heart with our new signee, Garrett Richards. Yeah, just seeing this, just like it was just, you know, a knife to the heart. I mean, I was always like a big Mata fan. I mean, I like what he's done, but he always dealt with injury. I'm like, okay, it's fine, it's fine. It's just little things here and there, whatever. But a partially torn UCL, right? Like, that's gonna knock him out for a while. And just knowing that he's going the rest of rehab, it really makes me sad. I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. You might need to go for the whole year TJ thing. And just maybe you should just go ahead and get it done. There's been very few pitchers that have been able to pitch with a partially torn UCL. I mean, just, I guess the only guy that I could honestly think of is Tanaka, you know, with the Yankees. And outside of him, I don't know who has been able to pitch with a partially torn UCL. So, you know, seeing him go the rest of rehab route, I'm just like, you're just delaying the inevitable. I mean, I would not want to go through that rehab, but I'm like, you know, I'm like, Brian, you might just want to go and get that done, sadly.
Yeah, I agree. Bob, do you think that his decision has anything to do with the fact that he's 21 years old and some of these other guys that, you know, do undergo Tommy John surgery, thinking most recently about Chris Sale or, you know, Garrett Richards ultimately trying to get it done? Do you think that has anything to do with their age, or is this just, I don't know, being hopeful?
Yeah, no, I would be more inclined to try to pitch through it if I was in my 30s, especially if I, you know, might only have one big contract in front of me remaining, or just kind of concerned that it could end your career. So I would think at this age that I would be more inclined to just get it over with, as, you know, grim as that sounds. And, you know, to add to what Shelley said, Richards came from Anaheim, and that whole Angels staff has dealt with that, whether it's, you know, Otani or Heaney, Andrew Heaney. I know Griffin Canning is the other name along with Tanaka that came to mind that pitched through it last year, but he's still younger and it's only been 1 year. So that could happen with Canning eventually as well, Garrett Richards. So no, I would at his age be more inclined to do that now based on age, but I mean, he feels a little bit snake bitten. I feel for him. The last few years has had different kind of ups and downs with injuries and shoulder soreness, and it kind of reminds me of like an AJ Puck situation where you don't know when, after all of these injuries, and whether he'll have the opportunity to ramp up and how many years he's in the system, whether they might just try to make him a relief pitcher long term. And I hope he's a starter, and he's definitely young enough to have the surgery, get that behind him, but there's that concern for sure.
Yeah, 21 years old. I kind of agree with you. I was hoping we'd see maybe even a taste of him in the major leagues this year, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be in the cards. Another guy we were hoping to see in the major leagues maybe at the end of this year, Tristan Casas, is back in camp after having an undisclosed medical issue in which the team flew him to Boston for. The fact that he's back in camp, though, seems like that's, you know, a non-issue, or at least taking care of whatever it was. So I think we all wish him the best. We're going to be talking a lot of Casas tonight, so we'll kind of skip over him for now. Bobby Dalbec, though, the guy who's manning first base right now while we wait for Tristan Casas to come up, has 4 bombs in 7 games. He also has 9 strikeouts. So, Bob, I mean, it seems like he's living up to his 3 true outcomes reputation here. But, you know, if he's going to keep hitting bombs at this rate, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I think so. And just seeing the ease at which he is hitting these bombs, and you see the game power, the grand slam that he hit a day or two ago was effortless. But you're right. I mean, it has that Adam Dunn feel of a 30 to 40 home run bat that strikes out over 200 times. And, you know, he could be the type of player, especially early on, that when he goes into a prolonged slump, he may lose playing time and you'd have to ride him when he's hot. So we'll see. I think Dalbec's as interesting a story as there will be going into the season, to see whether, you know, there aren't many players like that have that kind of power, but have the 3 true outcomes that you mentioned.
Dude is absolutely yoked too. Have you seen that guy's forearms? Holy shit.
I'll take a look shortly and get back to you.
Yeah. Get back to me on his forearms. He's a monster of a man. Shelly, a couple arms were just reassigned to minor league camp. A few that we're going to be talking about tonight: Thad Ward, Josh Winkowski, Durbin Feltman was also assigned. There were a few others as well. But did any of these names surprise you that they were assigned to minor league camp at this juncture, or were these kind of all names you expected to head down?
I guess all these names were kind of expected at this point of spring training. I mean, I will have to say that all these guys can still pitch in spring training games. So them being reassigned to minor league games, I guess, or minor league camp, doesn't necessarily mean anything when it comes to like spring training stuff. When I put this on the pre-pro, I was like, I'm very curious about why they reassigned these guys to minor league camp. I mean, I've been a huge fan of Thaddeus Ward. We'll probably talk about him, you know, later in the pod. But knowing that he, you know, didn't get any time at the alternative camp, he was one of, you know, the first guys to be reassigned to minor league camp. I'm like, well, maybe the Red Sox don't think highly of Thaddeus Ward as I do.
Yeah, that was one of the names that surprised me here a little bit too. The only thing I was thinking is maybe with the major league season being just around the corner, they just want to get more work for the guys who are going to be breaking camp with the team. But yeah, I agree with you. I was a little bit surprised that Thad Ward didn't stick around a little bit longer. But we'll talk some more Thad Ward later here. I want to get into maybe the biggest thing. We probably buried the lead here, but the rule changes for minor league baseball are substantial. So we're going to talk about those right now, and we're going to go to Bob first. AAA, Bob, decided to make the bases at second and third. First, second, and third, actually, all larger, going from 15 inches to 18 inches. Why would they do this? What's the point here? What do you think they're attempting?
I think this, combined with another item we'll talk about in a second with the pickoff attempts, is just trying to increase, you know, interest in stealing bases, or, you know, those attempts have kind of gone, have decreased for the last, I don't know exactly, but 5-10 years, it just seems like that there's less interest in that and more kind of on base and trying to hit a home run ball after that. So I feel like it's to try to entice teams to steal bases more often. It's combined with kind of some pickoff changes as well, that when they tested that out in some of the lower levels, it increased stolen base attempts by 70%. So that combined with, even if it's just half of a foot of 90 feet in between the two bases, is, you know, obviously a difference between safe and out in a lot of cases. So I think they're trying to entice teams to you know, increase. And I think it we'll see that with certain prospects that might have more interest, speed prospects or, you know, that aspect of the game that could become more interesting if this is something that goes into place, if it's successful and goes into place over the next year, whether that be in the labor agreement that's upcoming. It could make different players more interesting than we were expecting previously.
Yeah, Jaron Duran has to be licking his chops right now, seeing that those bases are going to get a little bit bigger. Right. I'm shocked that just the 3 inches would increase that much. I mean, am I missing something with that, Bob? Is that really such a big deal?
So it's kind of both things combined. It's that along with the pickoff attempts. So to get into that a little bit, it would be that the pitcher would need to step off to throw over, which essentially penalizes these left-handed pitchers that had such an advantage, the Andy Pettits of the world, really for the eternity of baseball, that rule has been in place. So, you know, that when you're a base runner and there's a left-hander on the mound, you have to wait that extra split second for them to definitively go to the plate. And that would be out of the game, and it's going to be in the minor leagues for a trial run, along with even, you know, the step-off snap throw over to first that the lefties are able to do. That would be removed as well. So it's more, you know, about that rule that would increase by 70%, that it was more of that. But, you know, the combination of the two would both be in play.
Yeah, and just to set the record straight, so it's just going to be the larger bases at AAA. The step-off rule isn't going to be in effect it'll be in effect at high A, right?
So right. That'll yep. be a lower So it was a lower level than that they had tried it before.
Okay. Double A has something extremely interesting happening as well. This one probably interests me the most because I think it's the thing that I dislike the most about baseball. Defensive positioning, particularly the shift. Shelley, what is going on with Double A? How are they trying to experiment with eliminating effects of the shift?
Yeah, so this is kind of this kind of rule change is kind of split between one half of the year and the other. So the first half of the year, all infielders basically need to be on the infield dirt, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that there needs to be it's not trying to put players on a specific side of the dirt. So I guess technically you could have all infielders on the right side of the dirt, right? And none on the left, if you wanted to. You wouldn't want to, but whatever.
Yeah, you could, yeah, though.
You could do that. So basically, you could still quote-unquote, do some type of shifting, just as long as you're on the dirt. But then, you know, MLB will look at kind of things that are happening in the first half of the year, and then they might make another change, which would basically say that you need to have two infielders on each side. So that would basically eliminate the shift. In theory. So this is, honestly, this is the biggest rule change. When I looked at this, I was just like, I don't like this. Because it just really limits, you know, defensive shifts and all this stuff. Like, all this defensive stuff that teams have done, right? So it really, honestly, it helps, you know, batters that can't quite beat that shift. So I'm just not a fan of any type of defensive alignment stuff, because like if a team wants to just put everyone on the right side of the field, whether it's, you know, third baseman, shortstop, right, left fielders, if they want to put them all over there, I don't fucking care. Excuse me. I don't care if they put them all over there. If they want to do that, you know, let them
set
do
the
that.
Tone.
Yeah, I like that, Shelley. That's a strong take right there. You know, one thing that I find interesting about this, and the shift pisses me off sometimes just because I don't like the lack of athleticism that we have at second base right now. We've talked many times on different podcasts about how sexy Pedroia's defense was and the plays that he would make over there, and, you know, seeing Michael Chavis's shape playing at second base last year was just not what I was looking for. And I do think that there is something to bringing back the hyper athletic second baseman and using that guy to cover the ground. So I like that idea of bringing some athleticism back into the game through that. But I also see your point about, you know, the fact that, you know, you get a pull heavy hitter up there who just can't beat the shift because he's just not a good enough hitter to beat the shift. But, you know, you're letting that guy get hits. But at the same time, that was baseball for 100 years that guy was able to get that hit. So I don't know. I guess I'm very interested to see how this plays out. This is the one I'm like, all right, I got to see the first half rule. I got to see the second half rule. And maybe I'll end up really liking it. I don't know. What do you have a thought on this, Bob, too? I know that this is probably the hottest topic. So if you got something on this one, I'll hear it.
Yeah, I kind of straddle that line as well on this topic. I think at the end of the day, you know, in any sport, you play a specific defense against a specific player to take away their strengths. And that's just how sports work. So I wouldn't be in favor of banning it entirely, but there's certain pace of play things, you know, that, you know, if we can get a pitch clock and there's a certain amount of time that everybody needs to be in place by and the pitcher's throwing the ball and the batter's in the box, I'm all for that. And then they have to stay there for the entirety of that at bat. I don't want people running back and forth with two strikes or anything like that either. So I don't want shifting, slowing the game down, but I think there's a place for it in some capacity.
All right. High A, the step-off rule. This one's interesting. Bob, you talked about this a little bit. This really affects lefties, though. I mean, more than anything, it seems like, if anything, lefties have gone from having the advantage, a huge advantage, to having potentially a disadvantage, in my estimation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's exactly what's happening. And, you know, I think an underutilized play has always been a righty having the ability to do the same thing at third base, and you rarely see it. It 99% of the time that you see a move like that, it's going to be a lefty, and they've perfected that. And it's a huge aspect and advantage of being a left-handed pitcher. I don't know. It's just part of the game for me, and it's been part of learning how to be a base runner, and it's just a nuanced rule that I always had thought is pretty cool about baseball. So I'm not in favor of removing that and forcing people to step off. That takes a long time to, as a right-hander, to step off, turn, throw to first. You'll never be able to pick anyone off again as a right-handed pitcher specifically. the amount of time that you would have to turn, you know? So I guess it would affect both sides more significantly the left-handers, but I like this idea the least out of anything we're talking about here.
So, Shelley, with this rule, are we going to see guys with Michael Chavis's body steal like 30 bases this year in high A? Especially with that catcher defense?
you honestly will. Just looking at just really advanced batters taking advantage of subpar catchers in the lower minors. Yeah, you'll probably see the stolen bases kind of like shoot up, right? And I'm just like, it's really just, yeah, all these rule changes are just really just gonna just really mess with everything that we do, you know, looking at minor leagues stuff.
Shelly, I love how you've become the, like, get off my lawn person with all these rules. It's your take of get away from my game, it's perfect how it is quite funny to me.
It makes me so sad just knowing who I am as a person, and now I'm the get off my lawn person when it comes to baseball. I'm like, oh no, what have I become?
It's all right. Yeah. You know what you like.
And you're getting us an explicit label on the podcast too, so you've made a lot of progress this week.
Love it. At low A, though, they're going to have a whole bunch of stuff going on. They're going to have pickoff limitations, they're going to have a pitch timer, and they're going to have robot umps. I guess, Shelly, which one of these bothers you the most as the requisite get off my lawn person?
100%, it is the robot umps. I like it in theory. Like, I really do. Like, yeah, I want balls and strikes to be called correctly when they're in the strike zone. Yes, I want that. The technology, I don't think, is there. Like, what I heard, you know, when they were experimenting with this, you know, and, you know, some other leagues, and I think at the AFL, especially at the AFL, I was hearing, like, from pitchers as well as batters, they were just like, this doesn't really make any sense. I'm being able to do this, I'm being able to do that. It's honestly, I don't think that the technology is there to actually have this thing be a thing. So again, I like it in theory, but I just don't think that the technology is there, and I hate that they're still trying to do this thing.
Yeah, it kind of bugs me that a guy would learn the strike zone one way for his entire time, you know, coming up through youth baseball and then high school and college and minor leagues, and then all of a sudden, one year, you have this completely different zone. It's just, it's weird. I don't like it. I agree with you, Shelly. Bob, I want to get the glass half full take, though, on this stuff going on in low A. Which of these rules do you like the best?
Yeah, I would say the pitch clock. I'm totally in favor of that. I needed to go to one minor league game to be sold on how great the pitch clock is. The games fly, and there's just a lot of bullcrap that doesn't happen down at those levels.
So now we know that you are a position player, Bob. Okay.
I played all over. But, you know, attending a game, there's less time that I'm sitting on my phone if I know that there's going to be a pitch every 20 seconds or whatever it is. So, yeah, I'm totally in favor of that. I agree about the robot umps. I'm on the same get off my lawn level with those, but with the pitch clock, you know, keep the games moving. All the little minor things that have happened over the last couple of years to try to shorten games, whether it's the three batter minimum or I think that all of this can be solved with a pitch clock, and you've got players who come up through the minor leagues that are used to that. And eventually that will be the group that will be there long term, and it won't be any different for them. So, you know, whether you grandfather that in with a certain group of players, or I'm not sure, you know, how you can sell everybody on it, but that's the one I'm most interested in.
Yeah, I agree. I like the pitch clock quite a bit. Anything that speeds up the game is good by me, as long as it doesn't fundamentally alter it too much. So we are the Get Off the Lawn crew as a podcast here with our game. Stop messing with it, MLB. And we definitely don't trust robots here on Over the Monsters Red Sox on Deck podcast. So, yeah. No thank you.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy.
Chumba. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, let's get to the AA Portland lineup. Man, this is an interesting team. Certainly more interesting than the AA team that I last saw in 2019 when I was actually able to go to the ballpark. But we're not going to bury the lead here with this lineup. I'm going to read you off the lineup, and then we're going to get to the gem of this team. At catcher, we have Ronaldo Hernandez, first base, Tristan Casas. Second base, Brett Netzer. Third base, Hudson Potts. Shortstop, Ryan Fitzgerald. Left field, John Meisis. Center field, Jason Rosario. Right field, Marcus Wilson. Yep, still on the team. And DH, Pedro Castellanos. Also feels like he's been a prospect for 30 years. But the guy who both Shelley and Bob, and me probably, because I won't be able to help myself, are going to coo about now and just whisper sweet nothings in your ears about is Tristan Casas. Shelley, why don't you go ahead and get us started with what people can expect to see from this beautiful man, Tristan Casas.
Yeah, I basically am just going to say is, oh my, I like this. Like, I love Tristan Casas, and the more video that I look and the more reports that I read, I'm just so excited about this dude. He is a 21 first baseman. He's played some third, but he's basically a third baseman. But, I mean, he's a really strong, thick, big dude, right? And he has what he does at the plate. I just absolutely love. He starts out, you know, with you know an 0-0 count. Like, he's a you know, just a nice, easy kind of a crouch, right? And his swing is really smooth and fluid. But what I love to see from this guy, like, when I saw this, I'm just like, OMG. Like, I just, like, this is so great. Like, when he gets the two-strike counts, like, he chokes up on the bat, right? And he, just to make contact, because he doesn't want to strike out, he doesn't want to get out, he will try to put a ball in play, right? Just so he doesn't strike out. I love that. Knowing that he has that awareness from a 21-year-old, that just blows my mind. And then also, he has, you know, double plus power. Like, if he just does just BP, right? That BP is, like, so sexy. Like, it's just going out. It's just so amazing. So he has a lot of really good things. I think he has a good head on his shoulders when it comes to baseball. He's like, oh, I don't want to strike out. Let me just put the ball in play. Let me see what it does. I am totally in love with Tristan Casas.
Ooh, it's hot in here. Oh, boy. That? Yeah, wow. Bob, how are you going to top that? That was pretty good right there. That got me warmed up.
Between that and Dahlbeck's forearms, we're getting everybody fired up today. yeah, I don't have a ton to add. I think the thing that impresses me about Casas and that I'm excited about is I think that the floor is high as well. You know, he definitely has the ceiling where he has an all-around game, but he's a very good defensive first baseman with an excellent arm, especially for someone his size. I mean, like Chelly said, 6'5", 250, you know, the first time that you see him in the box on the field, you'll say you're blown away at just kind of the size, but also that he is athletic for someone that size that plays first base, has some third base background that can play there in a pinch. through 90 miles an hour, has been clocked at that before. So good feet around the bag. So he's not going to be a liability on defense. And while he doesn't have base stealer speed, he is a smart base runner and, you know, he's going to put the ball in play, just like you both said. You know, doesn't have a high strikeout rate for a power hitter. You know, it seems like up and in, they say, is a bit of a hole in his swing, but he's young and he hasn't played at the higher levels of the minors yet. And is what, just turned 21 years old in the off season. So there's a lot of time to fix those small, you know, minor details that he might have in his swing. So it's a ceiling and floor combination that I completely agree. I think that between him and Duran and Downs, who we talked about last week, that those are three players that over the next year to year and a half, I think, you know, at least two of them are going to emerge into everyday players, or at least have kind of significant roles on the team.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of just ceiling too, you talked about Casas's floor here, which I agree with you, Bob. I think his floor is great. His ceiling to me is just one of the best hitters in the American League. Just a true Anthony Rizzo type first base masher, probably with more power than Rizzo. I love all the things that you guys mentioned, Shelley, about the choking up with the bat and about how he's trying to eliminate strikeouts. He said in an interview over the offseason that his idol is Joey Votto, and he tries to model his swing and his approach at the plate after Joey Votto. And when I heard that, I went from like, oh yeah, I really like Tristan Casas, to, oh my God, I love Tristan Casas. Anytime you're modeling your game after Votto, you have me. And you know, the thing that Bob said that I loved is just, he's right. I mean, the defense at first is pretty good. For a guy that size, he moves like a damn puma. And the arm at first base is just huge. He's by far my favorite prospect in the system. I get the appeal with Downs, but to me, it's not close. And Jaron Duran, I think, is the most athletic player. But I think in terms of just hit tool, Casas is way ahead. And the power is, if it's not Dahlbeck power, it's a hair away from being Dahlbeck level power, right? It's close.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake, do you think we could see him this year? Would it take an injury?
I don't think it would. Honestly, I think that if he performs at a high level at AA, which I think he will because he's so advanced for, you know, all the reasons Shelley said, I could see him finishing the season in the major leagues, probably August, September. I don't know. What do you think, Shelley? Do you think he can make it?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him there. I honestly think that this team is a tad bit more competitive. They'll probably stick with their current core a little bit more. But if I am totally wrong and the pitching, you know, the major league pitching just totally goes in the tank, I could really see him, you know, getting some time in September. And oh my, I would just love to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on from Casas because I don't know if I can. I'm going to have to change my shirt if we keep talking about him. but let's move over to catcher here. We have a couple interesting players at catcher for this team who should get a lot of time. Both Connor Wong, who I didn't mention when I read the lineup, but he's also there, and Ronaldo Hernandez, who was newly acquired from Tampa Bay. Bob, talk to me about Ronaldo Hernandez. He's sort of the shiny new toy here. What do we expect out of him?
Yeah, so Hernandez came over from Tampa a month or so ago in a deal for Chris Mazza and Springs, a couple of pitchers that went back to Tampa. It seemed kind of surprising, the return, you know, when you started to dig into Hernandez and see where he was on the prospect list. It seemed like a good return for some players that probably weren't going to stay on the 40-man. With Hernandez, it's his power and his defensive arm. are kind of the highest tools. His arm is ranked as a 70 on the 20 to 80 scale. So it's not as much that defensively that is an issue as kind of his receiving and actual, you know, without robot umps, that act of being a catcher without his arm is possibly what could hold him back. He might be kind of a bat first backup catcher that could fill in a DH if his bat is good enough. In the kind of what he's done so far, 2018 in lower A, he had 21 home runs and 79 RBIs, chipped in 10 steals, even though it's he's not much of a runner, but at lower A, it's easier to steal bases. He hit 284, and then in 2019, hit 265 in 103 games with 9 homers and 60 RBIs. So, you know, he has a solid bat, solid power. You know, the hit tool is lacking a little bit. It's below average, kind of doesn't walk a whole lot and has trouble recognizing some off-speed pitches. So, you know, he'll have to make some adjustments. It remains to be seen if he'll make it to the big leagues, if he'll be a part-time catcher, or kind of where he'll end up. But it's definitely interesting, and it's worth a shot. It seems like they have targeted a couple of these catchers between Hernandez and Wong that we're going to talk about. So that there's two options, and I think that this is probably the most interesting position battle if both players are assigned to Double A this spring.
Yeah, both players are very interesting and much better than what the Red Sox had in the system before these two players were acquired. So definitely an area of weakness. Shelley, Connor Wong is really interesting, not only because he's a catcher, but because he can move around a little bit. What kind of player do we have in Connor Wong, and how can he kind of come out on top in this situation? Because I think he's probably looked at as slightly worse prospect than Ronaldo Hernandez, but I think there's also some potential for him to end up with, you know, more time at catcher.
Yeah. I was really excited when Connor Wong was, you know, he came to the org. I mean, he was part of the Mookie Betts trade. And at the time, the catcher position, especially in the minor leagues and especially lower minors for the Red Sox, were extremely, extremely like bare bones. So I'm like, okay, this is our you know, backup catcher of the future. Like, I didn't think that he would ever really be like future catcher. But yeah, I mean, what kind of Wong brings is honestly a lot of versatility. I mean, he played shortstop in college. He's moved around the infield, and he's kind of ended up at catcher. So he's a very, very athletic baseball player. You know, and I think that he could stick at catcher, but I do think that he could be, I'm trying to pull up a name here, maybe like a, you know, Kalefa of the Rangers, yeah. You know, a guy who's been from catcher to third to shortstop. Like, he's a really athletic guy. He can, you know, he could take some time at catcher, but maybe he could be better at other places. He has a really, really, really long swing, and it could be a little bit of swing and miss there. But honestly, I just love the versatility of the dude. Whether he's a catcher, whether he's getting some run at shortstop, at third base, he's just filling in here and there. I think he could be a really good, honestly, util guy. And I'm hoping to see him in a couple years. And honestly, the Hernandez trade totally changed my lookout on Wong.
Yeah, I think Hernandez is probably a little bit more advanced behind the plate right now, but one of the things that I just can't stop looking at with Connor Wong is the power there. His slugging percentages have gone up basically every year. In the Midwest League, he was slugging 495, moved to the Cal League in 2018 and 2019, slugged almost 500, over 500 in 2019. Cal League is what it is, so, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt. But then Double A for the Tulsa Drillers, he had a 604 slugging percentage. So the dude swings and misses a lot. You mentioned that long swing, but also when he connects, I mean, the guy can drive the hell out of the ball. So it's a very interesting profile, and you know, I wouldn't hate the organization developing another guy with that type of versatility that can move around at different positions. I think clearly, based on the offseason from Bloom, that's something that the organization values moving forward. So even if he doesn't end up behind the plate, I think he might end up carving out a role on the team.
And it's important to note that Vasquez, Christian Vasquez, is kind of winding down on his contract. So it'll be interesting to see if either one of those players could replace Vasquez. What does he have? A year? 1 or 2 years, I think, left. I think 2 years left in his contract. It might be an option involved. But, you know, I'm sure that they hope that one of those players can emerge for 2 years from now to replace Vasquez when he'll be closer to 32, 33 years old.
Yeah, that's a good thought. All right, let's get to the outfield here, Bob. Two guys in the outfield who are kind of interesting. Marcus Wilson, who we thought might be a roster casualty, he's going to be the right fielder for this team, we think. And then Jason Rosario expects to be the center fielder. Rosario acquired last year. What kind of a player do we have in Rosario? And then, you know, do we expect any more steps forward from Marcus Wilson?
Yeah, I think with both of these players, it's interesting that they're both true center fielders, that they both, you look at the major league roster right now, and it'll be interesting to see who can play where, whether it's center field or right field. We know Verdugo can play right. Will he be able to play center? And with the difficulty of right field in Boston. So it's important to have that defensive aspect, whether it's as a starter or as a fourth outfielder, which both of these players could potentially be. With Rosario, he's 21 years old. He's been around for a while. He was a J2 signing in 2016 with the Padres, where they've had a lot of success with the international players. He has the speed and the defense profile, and the hit hasn't really followed along with that with his hit tool. And the reports out of the instructs weren't excellent. You know, he had some moments, but I think overall they didn't see the advancements with his hit tool yet. He's still only 21. He's always been young for the levels that he's played at. So you look at his stat lines and, you know, they don't blow you away, but he was, you know, 19 years old playing at high A, which is where he hit .242, you know, contributed some steals at 18, 19 years old, but hasn't really hit for great average or great power. His OBP is good. He's had, you know, between 370 and 400 OBP. So, you know, he's a patient hitter, but he can be a bit of a slap hitter, and I'm not sure whether he'll be a starter. He may be more of a backup outfielder. And then with Wilson, I think just kind of a note on him is that he's been pretty good in spring training. He's on the 40 man. So if they have an injury, if they decide that Duran isn't ready yet, in quotes, isn't ready yet, that Wilson might end up being able to take a spot early on in the season. He's 4-for-9, but he strikes out a good amount. He has 4 strikeouts, and that's kind of his profile. So I just think he's a name to keep on your radar. You know, not a huge upside prospect, but somebody that we could see this year, even early on in the season.
Yeah, very interesting names. Certainly, you know, much needed, just the same way that the catcher position was a little bit thin. Outfield position's a little bit thin, it feels like, for the Red Sox. So if they can get one of these guys to take a step forward, that would be interesting for the organization. Let's move on here to the rotation and the bullpen. Talk some pitchers before we get you guys out of here. Rotation, as projected by SoxProspects.com, Thaddeus Ward, AJ Pulite, Josh Winkowski, Frank German or Herman, I'm not sure how to say that one, Denny Reyes, Chase Shugart. And then in the bullpen, we have Caleb Simpson, Seth Blair, Caleb Ort, Johan Martinez, Cutter Crawford, who's recovering from an off-season Tommy John surgery, Emmanuel DeJesus, Rio Gomez, and Logan Browning. Shelley, I want to start with the most interesting guy here, Thad Ward. We mentioned him a little bit. He got some time in the spring, had one clean inning, too, when he did pitch. I think he pitched a second time as well. What kind of a player is Thad Ward, and do you think that he has true rotation future potential?
I really do think that he has rotation potential. Like, Thad Ward has really just been on my radar for a couple of seasons now. And it's really funny because, I mean, he was pitching, you know, in relief in college. And I'm like, okay, like, Thad Ward, okay, we drafted him. I'm like, okay, he'll start for a bit and then go into the rotation. But, I mean, he's added, you know, basically a cutter to his repertoire. So he has a fastball, slider, cutter now. And it's really, honestly, you could see him as a major league starter. Yeah, I'm not expecting him to be a number one, two, or three starter, but I mean, if we get a number four and number five starter from Thad Ward just by adding another pitch, like, this is really exciting. So Thad Ward, you know, he's 24 years old, right-handed pitcher. He kind of has like a three-quarters arm slot. He has a fastball that, you know, sits, you know, 90 to 95. I mean, it's not the biggest fastball. But he added a cutter, like I said, in 2019. And it's basically just been a wipeout pitch. So he has a fastball, cutter. He has a slider as well that he really throws. And it gets, you know, right beneath the zone to get some swing and miss as well. I mean, again, he still needs to work on perfecting the combo of the fastball, cutter, slider. But I really do think that this is a major league pitcher here. I think that. But knowing that he wasn't invited to the alternate site, and then he was like one of the first guys to, you know, quote unquote, demoted to minor league camp, gives me a little bit of pause about maybe what the team thinks of him. But I still like this dude. I think that we have a major league starter here. And I'm hoping that all of the, you know, stuff that we're seeing that he's not getting invited to a camp and he's getting debated really soon is just kind of, you know, hubbub, you know. I just really like Thad Ward. I am a huge fan.
Yeah, Shelly, I agree with you in your analysis on Thad Ward. Absolutely. I think you're spot on. I'm so interested in that cutter and how that plays. He's the pitcher that I think that I'm most interested in this year, just in terms of what he can do, what he can bring, in him taking a step forward. And just for the listeners to know, too, Shelly, that's not Shelly's stomach rumbling. That is one of her two beautiful French bulldogs on her lap snoring away. So, Shelly, who do we have the pleasure of being joined by tonight? Is that Soto or Orsillo?
That's definitely Orsillo. He is not excited about this podcast.
Well, one thing we are excited about is new addition, Josh Winkowski. Bob, what can you tell us about the new guy coming over from the Mets?
Yep, we'll definitely wake Orsillo up with this breakdown. Josh Winkowski, he was originally drafted by Toronto, actually was involved in two trades, went to the Mets, and then ended up in Boston as part of the complex Andrew Benintendi deal. He has been a starter in the minors and actually has had very good results at each of the low A and high A levels. And that's kind of what I like to see, is that he has pitched pretty significant innings. In 2019, he was over, I believe, 130 innings. So kind of has that type of long arm, even if he's a bullpen arm. His ERA, 278, 232, 319. At each of the three levels that he's thrown at in the last couple of years. He's more likely to be in the bullpen, although, like I said, he could be someone that gives you two or three innings. Has a really good fastball, tops out at 97. Matt Barnes was talking about it the other day, that he was really impressed with his fastball. You know, said that the ball was coming out good, that it was a heavy fastball, and that was someone that he was significantly impressed by in spring training. So with him, it's a matter of finding a second pitch. You know, if you finding a third pitch, you have a chance to be a starter. He doesn't really have a plus second pitch, so we're probably talking about more of a bullpen arm. He's been working on a split finger, I guess, in the canceled season that we haven't seen a whole lot of. But he's worked in a slider and a changeup in the past. The changeup doesn't really have enough separation from his fastball, reportedly. So it'll be interesting to see if he can develop a split finger, get a good second pitch. And, you know, he'll be 23 this year, so he could be within a year or two out if he's a bullpen arm that emerges.
Well, I love the idea of a splitter. I don't think enough guys throw the pitch, so I'd like to see a good one in the organization. We're going to end the show with talking about Cutter Crawford. Shelly, this is a guy I had an opportunity to see as a starter in Portland. I believe I saw his first start up in Portland. He throws a cutter, not surprisingly, but he's dealt with surgery. I mean, I know that he's probably pitching out of the bullpen because he's coming off of that surgery, but, you know, what do you see as his future? Is it bullpen? Is it rotation? And what does he need to do going forward?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think with all the surgeries that he had to deal with, he had to deal with TJS and then, you know, a surgery to remove bone spurs from his elbow, this past summer. I do think that he's going to be in the bullpen, but even if Cutter Crawford is going to be in the bullpen, I don't really care. Like, I think that his fastball is really good, and I honestly, a guy named Cutter who has an absolutely lethal cutter that gets a lot of swing and misses, I absolutely love. Yeah, so I do think that he's going to just be a reliever going forward. I would like to see, like, once minor league teams, I guess, are, you know, announced and teams are actually playing, I would like to see what the team thinks of Cutter Crawford going forward. But I do think that he's going to be, like, a really interesting bullpen piece, especially with that cutter, because, I mean, I've been looking at, you know, video, especially on ILLB, you know, .com, just, like, looking at video. He could be a really, really good reliever going forward.
What came first, do you think? The cutter, the pitch, or the name? I'm curious if Cutter is, like, his birth name, if that's on his birth certificate. Like, what are you naming this baby? Cutter. I don't know. It's interesting. Something to think about. What's your take, Bob? You think the pitch or the name?
I think it was the nickname first, but I don't have a witty answer for you here. I'm sorry. I love the name, though. It's great, and it's great in Boston. Cutter.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Get some cutter while you're drinking your glass of cutty. Yeah, that's it. All right. Well, with that, we're going to get out of here, and we're going to go drink a glass of cutty sark. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find Bob at BobOsgood15. You can find Shelly at ShellyV_643. You can find me at DevJake, and you can find Orsillo and Soto also at Shelly's account. So if you want to check those out, they are wonderful looking dogs. Yeah, I guess anything else you guys want to plug before we get out of here? Anything going on?
No, we finished up the ranking season at Dynasty Guru. I know all of us have been working on that for the last couple of months in some capacity, so it's good to have that behind us, and I'm looking forward to getting into some writing with some game action. So it's long overdue, ready to go.
That's it. Yeah. Shelly, anything from you?
Not really. I have just kind of like a recurring piece at the Dynasty Guru about my, you know, just random thoughts every 2 weeks. So there was something this week, and there should be something in a couple weeks.
Do you think we will get an opening day photo shoot of the two puppies?
100%. 100%. I mean, I will have to say that Soto has his own jersey that has his name and a 22 to go with Juan Soto. So yes, there will be photos.
Okay, wonderful. That is what I'm looking forward to. We thank you so much for joining us today for Red Sox on Deck Episode 2, for making us part of your routine, whether that's cooking dinner or going to the gym or listening to us on your commute. We do appreciate you carving out that time for us. And if you have any questions on prospects, reach out to us on Twitter. We're happy to help you there. Or send the question in. We'll address it right on the show. So thanks again, and we'll be with you again next week.